I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. Coming up in a little bit, we will talk about one of Rob's favorite athletes, Christian Pulisic. Did he play in yesterday's game? I mean, he was out there, but I mean, he was out there for cardio and vibes for the most part, and he also checked out of the game. The U.S. played five games in the World Cup. He missed one game. He left two other games because of injury. He has scored one goal in the last 14 games for the United States. He has been missing in action for the United States team, and they really needed somebody to step up yesterday, and he was not one of those individuals. I want to play for you guys a conversation that I had earlier today with Jason Davis. He is with SiriusXM FC, covers soccer, and we started our conversation with, what is the ceiling for the United States men's team? I kind of think they're pretty close to it.
I think this stuff happens slowly over time. I've been covering, writing, podcasting, doing radio about soccer for 20 years. Absolutely, there has been improvement in those 20 years. It's undeniable that there's been improvement in American soccer in those 20 years. 20 years ago, we didn't have multiple players playing for Champions League level clubs in the biggest leagues in Europe. That was not a thing we could even have dreamt of at the time. So there's improvement. The question is whether or not you can coalesce all these pieces together, whether it's Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Fabian Balogun, whether you can put them all together in one team in one moment every 4 years and make that all count to break into a club that, as you described, involves France and Spain and England and some of these other nations where, you know, to be fair to us, football is life. Their chief sport, the only sport they care about, the only sport that any of those kids who grew up in and around Paris care about playing is soccer. I hate the best athletes argument as a reason why we're not on that level, but there's something to the idea that culturally we just do not have that pressure. We do not have that desire. Maybe one day we will. Who knows?
Right now, we're breaking down the United States' loss yesterday to Belgium in the World Cup. If you had to sum things up yesterday, because it's easy for somebody like me to say, you know, everything went wrong. You know, you've been covering the sport for a long time. What went wrong yesterday for the United States?
I mean, you know, my analytical brain wants to say that they didn't have a good plan, or, you know, there was something the Belgians did that unsettled the Americans, that there was something they hadn't seen before. But to me, that came down to execution. I don't like the idea that they didn't care. I think they did care about winning, but for whatever reason, they came out flat as a team. And that sort of psychology infected everybody. They gave up a goal 9 minutes into the match, and they never recovered from that mentally, right? And you could see that Belgium was a better team to exploit some of the deficiencies in this U.S. men's national team than the teams they had played in the group phase, the Paraguays, the Australia, obviously Bosnia in the last round. Those teams let the U.S. have the ball. They let the U.S. dictate the game. And when the U.S. had that opportunity, they did really well with it. With Belgium, who is certainly technically capable of whipping the ball around the park, the United States had more trouble. And if you get bullied the way that Tim Ream did on the second goal, if you don't attack the ball when it bounces in the box, which is one of the biggest no-nos in soccer when you're talking about defensively covering your own net, you know, these things are going to happen. And again, I think for whatever reason, they weren't able to hit the switch necessary to really get themselves back into that game.
I mean, looking at Belgium yesterday, they just look bigger, stronger, faster, and more skilled than the U.S. Like, I'm watching them, and they got guys coming in as subs. The guy who scored the last goal on Belgium, he looked like he would have been the best player on the United States. Like, they just looked more physically imposing than the United States.
Well, that's Romelu Lukaku, and absolutely Lukaku is physically imposing, and we don't have one of those guys right now, and maybe we've never – I mean, Jozy Altidore was in that vein, but that's a long time ago now. Josie's retired. He didn't hit that height. Look, again, this is just that thing of when you grow up in Belgium, what sport are you going to play? If you're Romelu Lukaku and you're 6'2", and I don't know what he's at, probably a little bit more than 200 pounds because – soccer doesn't make them that big. You know, you play soccer. That's what you do. You grow into this. You become the best you can possibly be. You get to go play in bigger clubs, big clubs in Europe somewhere. And then when they call you, you play for your national team and you show out at the World Cup. The United States has, again, made progress, but we don't have sort of that next level of player, right? And again, we don't have the depth either. So what you saw from Belgium is what you're talking about, that they were able to kind of rotate through their team and pick a couple of guys who hadn't even started some of the games in this tournament. They left a guy like Kevin De Bruyne on the bench. Kevin De Bruyne, he's 35 years old, so he's no spring chicken, but he's one of the best players of his generation, full stop, across the globe. And they were like, yeah, we don't need you right now to go beat the Americans.
Right now, we're talking to Jason Davis. He's with SiriusXM FC Radio covering the World Cup. Let's talk a little bit about Christian Pulisic. Nobody on my Twitter timeline seemed to be happy with the way that he was playing yesterday. He received a lot of criticism for his game yesterday.
Yeah, he didn't show up when we needed him. That's the burden of being a star, right? Or the burden that is thrust upon you when you reach a certain level. You know, I'm not saying that Christian Pulisic is out there saying, "Hey, I'm the best." I don't think that that's his mentality. But he does seem to have shirked from the biggest stage when he had the opportunity on home soil to do something big in this tournament. He had a good first half against Paraguay. That's a long time ago. Obviously, he picked up an injury in that game. Who knows how much of a factor that was for how he looked. He looked slow. He didn't have that quick first step, which is it's so critical to his game. He can beat players just by that quick first step. He can earn fouls. He didn't do any of those things. He was a black hole with the ball. He was playing backwards. It seemed as though he, just like everybody else on that team, didn't have whatever it was mentally that would allow them to get themselves back in the contest. And then ultimately he gets hurt and he leaves, and it's a very sad ending to his World Cup.
What do you think is next for the United States in terms of development, in terms of the next 4 years as they prepare for the World Cup coming up in Spain in 2030? What's next for the United States men's soccer program?
Oh, well, first and foremost, it's finding a coach, because Pochettino's contract was set to run out after this tournament. Now, we had reports before the tournament that U.S. Soccer had made him an offer for a new contract. He said after the game yesterday that, you know, that wasn't the time to talk about it, and that, you know, there would be a conversation at some point. He's probably going to be an in-demand coach for a club job, which is obviously where he came from. This is not where you would expect him to be at this point in his career. It was kind of a coup for U.S. Soccer to get him. U.S. Soccer got a subsidy from a billionaire to pay his salary. You know, so there's lots of things kind of up in the air in terms of Pochettino. I'm not sure I want him back. In international soccer, you tend to have guys who come back for a second cycle, and the message gets stale. They get bored. Things go south. It happened for the United States. They brought back Greg Berhalter. Things went south. They fired him. They ended up with Pochettino eventually. Pochettino's only been in this job for, what, 2 years, something like that? He doesn't know what it's like to do a full four-year cycle as head coach of a national team that's not going to be playing against the biggest European powers, because they have their own things going on. So unless you're going to be happy playing Honduras and Mexico and CONCACAF Nations League, and maybe, if we're lucky, a Copa America that could involve Brazil and Argentina, you know, he's probably going to want to move on for a different challenge. So then the United States is in that position to go back out and find a coach. And I'll tell you, I don't think there's an obvious candidate right now.
I don't know if this is crazy to say, but ultimately, I am proud of this team. I think this team came really, really close to hitting its ceiling. Now, obviously, everybody wanted them to play better in the round of 16 against Belgium. But as I mentioned when we started this conversation, they dominated their group stage. They easily won their first knockout round game, and they made it to the round of 16. If you had asked every U.S. soccer fan, this is where they expected them to go, this is where they wanted them to go. People seem to really rally behind soccer. People really seem to support this team and like this team. They developed a couple of stars and new fresh faces. I'm proud of the way that this team competed for the most part in this tournament.
I would agree. I mean, sort of in the big picture, there are a couple of things that happened around the tournament that kind of soured that. Obviously, the end of it, the performance, right? The fact that it looks like they didn't have, I don't know, whatever, the mentality necessary to compete. People thought they didn't try hard enough, right? Which, I hate, because I think they care about winning, but they clearly didn't have whatever it was yesterday they needed to push Belgium. That's going to be a black mark on this performance in this tournament. You also have, obviously, the Balogun red card thing. He gets a red card. Yes, it was questionable, but, you know, generally speaking, these things don't get overturned. You don't get unsuspended in the middle of a tournament. To have that go down the way it did, possible political influence really turned not just the rest of the world against this team, but I think a lot of Americans are like, this is not how we want to do this. So there are a couple of things that maybe will drag down the energy. I also said before the tournament that I thought a quarterfinal appearance was sort of the bare minimum to call it a successful World Cup, and I'm not going to change my mind on that. I don't think it was a successful World Cup when you had your games in the United States of America, and you could have captured a million more fans if you just kept this going one more round and got a chance to play against Spain. But they showed some things that encouraged me, right? They showed a mentality in the first part of the tournament that I did like. They went after the game. They showed a maturity about winning matches and fighting for their opportunity to make the knockout stage. The crowds responded. We got the country roads moments that I don't think those fans who were in the building will ever forget. So those things are positive.
I'll follow up with that with this question. What do you think the legacy of the Golden Generation is? Because they mentioned this a couple of times on the broadcast about this being the biggest game of their soccer lives, and it all kind of led to this, and on the first World Cup since 1994. Like, there was obviously a lot of pressure on Pulisic and Balogun and all of those guys to have success in this game. Everything was leading up to it. How would you kind of define that Golden Generation as we are moving forward?
It's a good question. I always bristled at the Golden Generation thing because it's contextual, right? They're our Golden Generation. Doesn't mean they measure up to the Golden Generation of Spain, of France, and England, and Argentina. All those countries have won World Cups, right? We have not. So for us to say Golden Generation, I guess it just created a burden on them to perform at a level that would have been, you know, beyond what this country has ever done. Now, at some point, obviously, we want to break through. We want to get to that next level, and we want to be a quarterfinal team as often as possible. We want to make a semifinal, all those things. That's absolutely true that moment needs to come at some point. But it's really tough for me to be too heavy-handed with my criticism of this quote-unquote Golden Generation when we kind of still are where we've always been. The rest of the world didn't stop getting better. And so for us to be top 15, top 20 on a regular basis, that feels about right to me. Now, this group, again, will probably be taking some criticism because they didn't do the extra thing, especially on home soil. Pulisic didn't show up in this tournament, not in the way we needed him to. Weston McKennie had a good group stage, but obviously it's about your last performance. And, you know, Tyler Adams, Balogun in his first World Cup and being added to this team in the last cycle, I think he's going to come out of this looking pretty good. Chris Richards, pretty good as well, despite the performance last night. We're going to be saying goodbye to some players who weren't really part of the Golden Generation. So it's a mixed bag. I think, you know, for the most part, these guys will slot right in with the Michael Bradleys and the Josie Altidores as players we revere within the context of American soccer without, you know, calling them, you know, extra special.
That was Jason Davis of SiriusXM FC joining us to talk a little bit about the World Cup as the United States was eliminated yesterday against Belgium. We had one of the more exciting games of the tournament. I don't know how Argentina just continues to play in these games. Argentina had one of them against Cape Verde a couple of days ago. They had one earlier today against Egypt. They were down 2-0 in the 77th minute. They scored 3 goals in regulation time and win 3-2. A great win for them. Lionel Messi also scored in this. So Argentina, they have advanced to Kansas City this weekend. We will see if they will play either Switzerland or Colombia. Those two teams are playing right now. The winner plays Saturday at Kansas City Stadium, and that is the final game that Kansas City will host in the World Cup. Speaking of the World Cup, coming up on the other side, we are going to talk about Rob's favorite athlete, Christian Pulisic. Where was he in this tournament? We'll get to it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Your home for all things Chiefs football and Royals baseball.
I'm a professional complainer.
Is The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 96.5 The Fan.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Text line 913-586-7965. This is what I want to talk to you guys about. There's a lot of things I love about sports. I love the athleticism. I love the drama. I love the tension. There's a lot of things I love about sports. My favorite thing about sports is you can only hide it for so long. Eventually, Miami of Ohio had to prove to us how good they were. Who cares what you did in the MAC and beating up on all those teams? Eventually, you had to play some big dog teams from another league. We talk a lot about in the NFL how you don't think this team is good because of the schedule and they didn't play this team. You know what? Eventually, you will line up against a team that the public thinks is good, and you got to prove it. You cannot hide it forever in sports. If you are a top fighter, eventually you're going to have to go up against another top fighter to prove to us that you are the best. This is the case in a team aspect. This is also the case in an individual aspect. Now, I understand that not all of you are a fan of this player, but you know what I am saying is true. One day, somebody told you about this teenager from Akron, Ohio, who was really, really good at basketball. And they sold it to you in a way that he could be the next Michael Jordan or the next Magic Johnson. And you probably went into that game a little bit skeptical. Maybe not as good as y'all say he is. Let me see for myself. And you saw that kid from Akron, Ohio. He turned out to be really, really good at basketball. You guys remember early Mike Trout conversations? How early Bryce Harper conversations? Early Tiger Woods conversations. Bryce Harper was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 years old. He graduated early from high school so he could go play JUCO. He wasn't getting enough playing other high school kids. He went to go play JUCO baseball. Hey, I want to see if that kid's really good. He proved right. He ended up being really good. He's going to make the Hall of Fame one day. I've sat here and I've listened to Rob tell me about Christian Pulisic. Rob has two jerseys, one of which I bought Rob as a gift for his engagement. I got him an old school Rafe LaFrance jersey, the official, not a remake, not a Mitchell and Ness. I mean the old school champion jersey back in the day. And he also has a Christian Pulisic. I've never seen him wear a Mahomes. I've never seen him wear a Kelce. I've never seen him wear a Paul Pierce. Those are the only two jerseys I've ever seen Rob wear. Christian Pulisic is his favorite athlete. I've sat here and I've listened to Rob talk to me about golden generation and how important this World Cup is and how they've been gearing up for this World Cup. So I wanted to see if it was true. I wasn't watching Man City or Chelsea or whatever team he was playing on. This is the World Cup. Let's see what you do. Christian Pulisic yesterday, he was doing his best Where's Waldo impression. You couldn't find him. It was like an I Spy book you read with your kid at bedtime. I couldn't find him. What in the world was he out there doing? He has scored one goal in the last 14. He led the game in turnovers yesterday. Then in the second half, he then kicks his own foot or kicks somebody else's foot and then limps around and eventually has to get removed from the game. As I told you guys, I don't watch soccer nearly enough to tell you that Christian Pulisic is bad. I honestly, I don't know. I can only go off what I'm supposed to go off of. But I'm telling you, I've never seen him be good. I've never seen him score a goal. I've never seen him have an assist. I've never seen him look like the United States' best player. I'm starting to believe that it was all fake. Like he's Kaiser Sose. Like he's the therapist from The Sixth Sense. That's what I'm starting to believe. That's what I'm starting to feel like. I don't believe that any of it is real. I've never seen it before. I've never seen that guy be good. And yesterday when they needed him to be good, he wasn't good. I mean this in all seriousness. I just started watching the United States. I don't know, 3 weeks ago. I didn't know who this Flo Balogun guy was 4 weeks ago. Had no clue. Twellman, I didn't know who Antonio Freeman's kid was. I had no clue. There's no way you came out of watching the World Cup and watching the U.S. and thinking that Christian Pulisic is one of their three best players. There's no way. There's no way. I'm sorry. Not based on what they did in the World Cup. I'm not saying their resume. I'm not saying what they did in the EPL or games that maybe you weren't watching or weren't paying attention to. I'm talking about in these World Cup games, if all you got is these five games like I have to go off of on who I think is good and who I don't think is good, there's no chance you come away with that thinking that he's one of their three best players. There's none. I feel lied to. Let me tell you, I feel had, hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok. That's how I feel watching Christian Pulisic play soccer. You guys lied to me. That's what happened. You guys lied to me. I was led to believe that he was the next great American sports superstar. That's what I was made to believe. That he was Simone Biles. That he was Michael Phelps. That he was Anthony Edwards. That he was Jason Tatum. That's what I was led to believe. No. It's fool's gold. He doesn't pass the smell test. He doesn't pass the little diamond test. All of it just feels, it feels fake. Rob, you got to defend your man. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I didn't see what I just saw. Because he played extremely poorly. And one of the reasons they got smoked yesterday was because of him. And him not being nearly good enough.
All right, let's have a Christian Pulisic conversation.
Let's do it.
I'm excited to have this. First off, you said he was MIA. Oh, I saw him. He was the guy who was awful. He, at one point, in his first five touches, had three turnovers. He was back to the goal. He was going the wrong way more than he was going the right way. He was really bad yesterday. As you know, I have been long a defender of Christian Pulisic. He has been the face of what's supposed to be the generation that changes things for American soccer. It was 10 years ago, he was a 17-year-old wonder kid who took the field, ironically, in Kansas City. For his first friendly, he scored a goal. He was this phenom 17-year-old who was playing at Borussia Dortmund. He was getting high praise from his coach, Jurgen Klopp, who was one of the best coaches in the world. He was being pursued by all the biggest clubs in the world. He was the face of change. He was the next it thing in European soccer. But if you look at the three World Cup cycles he's been a part of, it has been failing. It has been entitlement. It's been infighting. It's been problems. When he first took the field for the United States in a World Cup, you know, we're pushing forward, he was the teenager on the team that failed to make it. That was 2018. Everyone gave him a pass, myself included. Hey, there was Clint Dempsey on that team, Matt Beasler's on that team. That's a veteran-laden team. You're a 17-year-old. You can't be expected to fix things. They fail to make the World Cup. He gets a pass. 2022, he really has one moment in a game against Iran in the World Cup. A game that, by the way, after scoring a goal, he left due to injury. He was MIA against the Netherlands. He was MIA in the other match against England. He was just kind of out there. And a lot of people gave him a pass. Hey, Greg Berhalter's the coach. He's a bumbling doofus. How can you expect Christian Pulisic to be good when he's coached by a bumbling doofus? Fast forward to this World Cup. He's got the coach. He's got the veteran leadership. He's supposed to be the guy. Everything's supposed to work. He had one good half against Paraguay. He leaves with injury, misses a match, checks into a match, doesn't matter, and was MIA or actually terrible last night. When you combine all those things with the fact that under his, poster child time is for the U.S. men's national team, there have been no magical moments. There's been nothing fans have written home about. There's been one quasi moment, but even then, it's small. They basically had a team in 2022 that was infighting. The coach and the players never got along. And there's been rumors and questions of entitlement between former players and these players who say they don't care about it. He says he just tunes out the noise. But there's always been a sense that they don't really care about wearing the crest on his chest. And then right before this World Cup, the coach stripped him of his captaincy. You're supposed to be the leader, the guy on this team. They take captain away from it. They give it to a 39-year-old MLS player. Did you hear him say, hey, that irks me. I'm going to go out there and play the chip on my shoulder. I'm going to earn the armband back. Nope. Christian Pulisic has always fallen short, and I've made excuses for him. The analogy I saw on social media, and it's perfect. We made him Captain America, and he is too weak to pick up the shield. I have now turned on Christian because he has never lived up to expectations. We wanted him to be a leader of a new generation. He has shied away from leadership and been the poster child of what could have been, should have been better.
What are you going to do with your jersey?
I mean, it's a Chelsea jersey. It doesn't play there anymore, so it goes into the closet.
It's a throwback now.
It's a throwback now.
I want to play a couple audio cuts for you guys. Carly Lloyd, American legend. She also agrees. Christian Pulisic, not good enough yesterday.
No, look, you know, it's a bit of a downer for us being out here now after this loss. But I felt like they lost the game before they even stepped out onto the pitch. And I'm not sure why, and I don't know the reasons. But just from the beginning, just chasing, tentative, scared, just not confident on the ball. And I think big-time players, you wanted some of those big-time players to step up in big moments. And I got to be honest, you know, I was a bit disappointed with Christian Pulisic. I think whether he wants to be the star of this team or not, we didn't see enough from him in this particular game and really the whole World Cup. Little glimpses here and there.
He didn't do nothing for 2-3 weeks. I can't remember a Christian Pulisic moment in this tournament. I can't remember a play, a sequence, nothing. I remember Freeman. I remember Balogun. I remember that free kick. What's the guy that hit the free kick?
Tillman.
I remember Tillman. Christian Pulisic, MIA, bro. Not good enough. He didn't report for duty. He wasn't there. Embarrassing performance. Here's Clint Dempsey. Here's what he had to say about yesterday's disappointing loss to Belgium.
Yeah, Thierry said it best. There's levels to it. We didn't start the game well. The way in which we conceded, Ketelari played really well. Trossard played well. Tillemans played well for them. Luka Bakio as well. And then we get the goal against the run of play. You think, okay, we're back in it. But then we concede right away. All right, so we come out of the second half. Got a little bit more life to us. Looks like we're going to get back into the game. And to concede a goal, which we did when Matt Fries made that mistake. I mean, it was too much of a mountain to climb. And then to add insult to injury, another mistake from Chris Richards at the end. Lukaku gets the goal. So, look, happy for the team to have dealt with the pressure that they had on their shoulders to go out and inspire this country and get that home field advantage. But still, we're in the same situation. We're not getting past the round of 16. And to be considered a great team, you got to do what the team in 2002 did or the team in 1930 did. So there's a lot of positives to take away, but at the same time, there's levels to it, right? And look, proud of the boys for the heart that they showed, but when you came up against a side that was, you know, a top 10 in FIFA rankings, to see what you're made of, we left with the same answers. We don't have as much depth as we thought we did, and we could see too many goals.
That was Clint Dempsey. All that audio comes courtesy of Fox and the World Cup. Rob, let's talk about this, because this does feel like we are kind of dusting off the vinyl and playing the greatest hits. Text line 913-586-7965. I imagine that this is an opinion that a lot of people have. The U.S. will never get to being top 10 in the world due to the fact of how expensive it is to play in legit good travel leagues as these kids grow up. You're never going to get some of the best athletes that our country has to offer because of that cost. I can't speak to how much youth soccer costs. I do think this. I think there are two maybe main points that I have. The first one is, I don't really think that our country cares about being that good at soccer. That's number one. Like, I feel like we at least have to come to that understanding of all of it. I don't think that we, as a country, really care about being that good at it. I think we care about being really good at football. Like, we take pride in it. Communities take pride in you being really good in football. It is something that you are taught from when you are a small child. You will play football in certain parts of the United States. We all love it. So that's one part of it. Like, I don't think that we care enough. And when you see the World Cup and Rob going to a World Cup game, there is a noticeable difference between the relationship that we have as a country with soccer and the relationship that they have when it comes to soccer. It would be nice for us to be good at soccer. They need to be good. Soccer is a part of their culture, the same way that basketball is a part of our culture and football and baseball is a part of our culture. It's radically different when it comes to soccer. I would also say, in that same vein, I don't think we, because of, I guess the first point is, I don't think we want to push those kids to go play soccer. I'll give you an example, because I feel like we always use the top athletes. Let's use somebody like L'Jarius Sneed, for example. You think there's a world in which we'll get to where kids like L'Jarius Sneed grow up and they play soccer? Think about that. L'Jarius Sneed grew up in small town America and turned out from small town America to grow up to play college football, and then grew up from playing college football to winning a Super Bowl. Rob, is there a system in place to get kids like L'Jarius Sneed to go play? Because I don't think that exists. There are systems to get that kid to play basketball. There are systems in place to get that kid to play football and baseball. I don't know if we have a system to get kids like that to go play soccer. So I just feel like, I don't know why we just can't accept as a country, we don't want it bad enough when it comes to this. We really don't. And that's fine. I'm fine with that. I feel like everybody else isn't fine with that. I'm cool with the relationship that we have with soccer. We've got the MLS. That's a really cool event to go out to, take your family out to, support sporting. It's really cool to go out to the KC Current. It's cool to watch soccer when it's over there. It's cool to watch soccer when it's on Peacock. But are we really, as a country, willing to invest the resources necessary to be really, really good at soccer? I don't think we care about it enough, and that's fine. Duke could be better at college football if they really wanted to be. Kansas could be better at college football if they really wanted to be. That's not where their passion is. Hey, win 6-7 games. Don't embarrass us. Make a bowl game. And we're going to pump all of our resources because we want Tyron Stokes. We want Darren Peterson. We want to pay for the rules of basketball to be here. We built this entire building to celebrate how good we are at basketball. I just feel like every 4 years we lie to ourselves about how good we want to be at soccer. We do not care about soccer enough to start pumping the resources, whether it is physically, whether it is in bodies and talent, or teaching young kids how to be good at soccer. That's just not where our passion is. The best player on the U.S. team did not learn how to play soccer in America. We were laughing and joking about it. People were getting mad at me. But if Flo Balogun grew up in this country, he would not play soccer. He'd be a basketball player. He'd be a football player. He'd be doing anything else other than playing soccer.
I have no problem with the idea that you send the best players to Europe to train over there. The problem is, for your college football analogy, and Duke, you know, is fine being bad at football. What frustrates me is the people that run U.S. soccer are also fine with it, and that's infuriating. It's one thing if you said you're fine with the way it's working in soccer. Not a soccer fan. That's fine. If Joe Schmo listening, I don't like soccer, I'm fine with the way it works. That's fine. If you're the people in charge of U.S. soccer, it's not supposed to be fine. Travis Goff, when he speaks with the media at some point this week at Big 12 Media Days, is not going to say, yo, 5-7, 6-6 is cool with me because vibes, you know? He's going to talk about wanting more from the football program. That's what infuriates me, is the people that run U.S. soccer have the same opinion as you, and that's where the fracture is. Dan Wetzel, who might be the best sports writer in America right now, he's very good, has an article right now on ESPN. It's free. I would encourage you to read it. It's all about the fracture in U.S. youth soccer, and we've talked about this on the show. It has become a country club sport. It's pay for play. It's traveling to showcases. It's coaches that aren't really teaching, but they're just taking kids on vacations, which means it's inherently for the rich kids, which means you inherently don't get some of the best available athletes. If the U.S. Federation would fix those things, maybe you'll never get LeBron James to come play soccer over basketball. But you know what? You could get kids who are going D2 for football, or playing at Miami, Ohio for football, or Miami, Ohio for basketball, to be intrigued by soccer. But unless you have the money to belong to Leawood Country Club right now, you're not interested in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, there's a racial component here. I know nobody ever wants to discuss with soccer. We can leave it alone. I just don't know if the point of soccer in this country is to get either those kids interested in soccer and to get those kids playing soccer. And I just don't think that we as a society care enough to be good at it. Everything else that we as a society care about, we actually get really good at. Gymnastics, really important in America. It's really important. We're really good at gymnastics. Like there's some things that really track really matters. I don't think that America really cares about being really good at soccer. I don't think that it is important for us to be good at soccer the way that it is with all of those other things. And as long as that continues to be the case, this is just kind of the cycle that we'll be in. I think the U.S. came very, very close to hitting their ceiling in this tournament. They dominated group play. They won their first round game. They went up against a European team that is rated higher than them in the FIFA ratings. They lost. They're out of the tournament. I don't really know if it was ever going to go that much different than how it ended up. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Daniel Sperry of Sporting Kansas City and the Kansas City Star. He's going to join us. We'll get his opinion on this. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with prominent Mizzou fan Carrington Harrison.
I support Kansas. I want Kansas to win.
On 96.5, The Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm a big believer that a lot of time men, maybe more specifically than women, talk themselves out of things. Like there has been a woman, maybe multiple women in your life, that you actually really had a chance. You really did. You were doing everything right up until a certain point. And then you said the wrong thing, you did the wrong thing, and completely ruined it. You were right there. And you kept talking. Sometimes the best thing you can say is nothing at all. Sometimes the best course of action is to not do an action, just be quiet. Let me give you two examples. RG3. Now, I don't have anything against RG3. I mean, we tried to get him on the show a couple of times. I don't have anything against him. He maybe sent the worst tweet in the history of Twitter, and that's tough. That's tough. There's a lot of doozies on there. So it started with, congratulations to Belgium. You beat us fair and square at our best, and you were better. You earned it. Now, Rob, if that's all RG3 would have said, would have been all right. In fact, I don't know who can disagree with that. Hey, salute, Belgium. You won fair and square. United States was the home team. U.S. had all of their players. You won the game. Salute. He kept talking. You had a chance. Everything was going well. Why'd you keep talking? He then sent this tweet out. We lost not only because Belgium is a better team, but because we aren't a united front as fans. We're supposed to be the United States of America, not the divided states of America. Wait, hold on. Hold on. You're telling me it's our fault they lost? Is that the point he's trying to make here? Because I didn't have anything to do with this. He's trying to explain to me that if we were all on the same page, if we were all working together, that's all it would take for us to be better at soccer? I mean, we're super divided. That's not affecting how good we are at basketball. They won the gold medal, didn't they? I mean, this country, it's not all kumbaya. Didn't we just win the gold medal in hockey? Like, maybe I'm forgetting something here. That's all we got to do to be good at soccer is come together. Because I didn't have anything to do with that. You're saying if we got along better, that would have made Christian Pulisic play better? That's what you're telling me? You're telling me if we had got along better, that Desi guy wouldn't have got subbed out at the 45-minute mark, they didn't even give him a second hydration break. They let him just keep the extended time. Hey, you good. We don't need you out here no more. What is RG3 talking about? We weren't a united front as fans, and that's why we lost. It's my fault they lost? Rob, it's your fault? What? So he's saying that if we all come together, me, you, and the text line, the Chiefs will win the Super Bowl. That's all we got to do is just stick together for the next 6 months. I don't know if that plan's going to work. I'm sure I'll upset you guys at some point. What is he talking about? That's number one. That's one of the worst tweets I've ever seen. The next person I want to tell you about, this is not a tweet. This is just another person. Brandon Ayuk. I know somebody in your life cares about you. I know you don't have an agent, but you got to have a friend. You got to have a father, a grandfather, a uncle, a mentor. Everybody has somebody that loves them, cares about you, wants to see you do well, cares about your best interests, is emotionally invested in you. Brandon Ayuk, you got to start listening to those people. Every time Brandon Ayuk gets on the internet, he does more and more damage to himself. He moves like Antonio Brown with none of the benefits of Antonio Brown. I mean, AB's crazy. I mean, I never met him before, but based on his actions, I think that's a fair assumption to come to. AB's crazy. But at one point, Antonio Brown was the best wide receiver in the league. At one point, he was one of the most productive wide receivers in the history of the NFL. I understand why the Raiders were willing to take a chance. I understand why Tom Brady was like, you know what? I think I can make this work.
Twice.
I get that. That all makes sense to me. That lines up. Brandon Ayuk, what are you doing? Brandon Ayuk, maybe you don't have anybody that cares about you. I'm not even sure if I care about you, but from brother to brother, from black man to black man, I do feel like I can give you this advice. You got to disconnect your phone. I'm serious. You got to call Verizon right now and tell them you don't need a phone. You got to call T-Mobile right now and tell them you don't need a phone. You got to disconnect from Instagram. You got to get off of there. You got to get off Facebook. You're going to tweet and Facebook and Instagram live yourself out of the National Football League. That's a good job. That's a well-paying job. I can't imagine being the team that would want Brandon Ayuk. In the end, Rob, it's honestly, it's counterculture to what he wants. If Brandon Ayuk's goal is to get off San Francisco, this is the worst way to go about it. Because I imagine you want off of San Francisco. You also want another team to want you. Who in the hell will want Brandon Ayuk? I don't want him. You could tell me Brandon Ayuk could get 1,000 yards next season. I still wouldn't want him in Kansas City. Please keep him. Keep him away from Taylor Swift. Keep him away from Patrick. Keep him away from Andy. Keep him away from everybody. I don't want him around anybody on their team. You think I want him and Rashee Rice talking to each other, communicating with each other? No, not at all. That can't be Rashee Rice's OG. That can't be the veteran in the wide receiver room. Sometimes I'm telling you, everybody could learn this message. Me too, me included. I'm sure I do this. I've done it before in my life, absolutely. Sometimes the best thing you can say is nothing at all. Sometimes the wisest thing you can do is not say anything. RG3, stop tweeting, bro. I'm sorry. I just stop. We want you off of there. I think you should want to get off of there. It can't be fun. It can't be enjoyable. Just continue to do your ESPN thing. Go to the Heisman House. Talk to kids. I'm sure it's a great life. I'm sure it is. And Brandon Ayuk, bro, you can't. I don't want him on any social media, Rob. Not a Facebook, not a Snapchat, not a TikTok, not a nothing. I don't want him to have a phone. If you want to use a phone, you got to use a landline. Like the old days. You got to use a rotary phone, a walkie-talkie. You can't be on your cell phone anymore. Just a terrible decision.
The Brandon Ayuk thing is wild to me.
Crazy.
I mean, he was trying to get on the Commanders, but then Jaden Daniels got asked about it. Like,
at an event and he like kind of gave a non-answer and then you started getting all weird on social media. Does he want to play football anymore? Because it's pretty clear on social media he's never going to play football again, but he's acting like he doesn't want to. Like, you wouldn't be doing this if you were actually trying to stay in the league, right?
I don't know, man. I'm serious. I don't know. I wish I had a good answer to your question, but I don't have a good answer to your question. I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. It confuses me. I would advise him to do it. Somebody said, what if he gets a flip phone? No. I don't want him to have any phone that has internet access. I want him to have an old school, you got to sit down at the kitchen table, our phone hanging up on the wall with a cord. That's the only kind of phone he can have. Not a pager, not a beeper, not a sidekick. I don't want him to have any of those things. He doesn't need to do that. Maybe he shouldn't even have a phone. Write letters to people. Every time he gets on the phone, it's something bad. It really is. It's something bad that happened. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will reset things. The United States, they got blasted last night against Belgium. Keep it right here, Sid Drive.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South. And in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.